Good afternoon, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnell Doray, and joining me today is Sharon Stanley.
Hi, Arnell.
Hey, Sharon. Naturalistic Support is a unique approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. On Naturalistic Support, we help each other, combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support. This involves you calling us to talk about yourselves as well as to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877. And this week, we continue our look at belief and disbelief. Why do we believe as we do? Are some beliefs inherently intolerant? Are non-believers intolerant toward believers? How can believers and non-believers treat each other with respect and kindness? Are there ideas that both believers and non-believers can share? Last week, as some of our callers shared their beliefs, it seemed as if we should continue this topic. Belief and non-belief is a big topic, Sharon.
I agree.
Yeah. So one of the things that came up is the differences between different types of knowledge and beliefs. There are primarily three types of knowledge: objective, subjective, and intersubjective. Now, Sharon, you were saying that when you've worked with kids, you talk about this in some context, right?
Yes, we did. In fact, we start very young with kindergartners, and we talk about fact and opinion. And we, you know, teach them how to notice the difference in somebody's writing or in something's writing. We tell them a fact is always true, no matter how you put it, no matter how you spin it. An opinion is not always true. It is what someone believes. So in a much more elementary, no pun intended, way, we try to teach children this at a very young age.
Yeah. The only issue I have with presenting it in terms of fact or fiction is that subjective truth is true to the individual, right? It's something that, from their perspective, it's not fiction. From their perspective, it's a truth that they personally hold, which is a little different than fiction, which everyone kind of agrees is pretend or made up.
Well, we really don't go into intersubjective with young children, because the things they believe, like Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, it's not my job as a teacher to comment on those things, if you know what I mean.
Right. You know, it's funny. Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy are... So we talked about objective and subjective, you know, objective being truth that we can all share, and it's demonstrable. And therefore, and reliable. So you can demonstrate it again and again and again. It's reliable, repetitious demonstrations will always demonstrate what is objectively true. Subjective truth is not so. Subjective truth is personal. But then there's intersubjective truth, which is what a group of people agree upon. And, you know, like, for example, they talk about the value of a dollar. A dollar is a piece of paper. But, you know, we all agree that it has X value, and that's kind of an intersubjective understanding among a group of people. So there's nothing objectively real about a dollar, except there's this intersubjective agreement to regard it as being what it is. But the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus, as you mentioned, it's interesting because that's both an intersubjective fact and fiction. So when we talk to kids about it, you know, that everybody who believes that it's beneficial to their child's imagination to be kind of tempted or kind of stoked with fantasies of Santa Claus when their kids are very little, everyone who believes that and encourages that in their home, they're kind of willingly participating in this intersubjective agreed fiction that they're going to treat as a truth with regard to the children. But everybody also knows, every adult knows, that it's, you know, it's this game that we play with our children. It's this show we put on. In some families, it's more elaborate than others, but the idea is that it's sort of this agreed upon fiction as well. The term objective, subjective, and intersubjective are found in philosophy, science, and social theory, and they're describing different ways of understanding and evaluating reality, truth, and experience. And if you've thought about these ideas, if you have any comments you want to make, our number is 212-209-2877, and we're talking about beliefs, and there is a thing called objective truth, which means that independent of any observer, truths and facts are verifiable, measurable, and consistent across observations. Another example of this would be how water boils at 100 degrees centigrade at sea level, or that the Earth orbits the Sun, even though there are people who would dispute it.
And I was going to bring that up because I just met someone, as you know, about 2 weeks ago.
Flat earther, right?
A flat earther. Wow. I couldn't believe it. I just could not believe it.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. And you know, when people believe in these kind of conspiratorial worldviews, the more information you give them that disputes their belief, the more they say, that's even further proof of the conspiracy. That, you know, all the information to the contrary is just yet another example of the way everything's been stacked by the conspirators. Right?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Objective truths are not influenced by personal feelings or opinions. And the effects, again, are reproducible. Now, subjective truth is dependent on an individual's personal experience, their feelings, or their interpretation. For example, this soup is too salty, which I would never really say because I kind of like salt. But you might say that to salt, to soup that I have just gotten to perfection, you might think it too salty. And so that's, you know, my subjective truth is that it's perfect. Yours is that it's too salty.
And it's things like that that make the world go round. And it's why it's nice to have friends with different ideas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you can discuss them reasonably and nicely.
Yeah. So, you know, or I prefer jazz music to rock music. That might be, you know, someone's subjective experience. And there's no right or wrong with that. The subjective experiences and truths vary from person to person. They're not verifiable by any external measurement. And they're subject to our moods and the way in which we remember or fail to remember something and our perceptions. Subjective truths are private and personal.
And I love to put music in there because music really is private and personal.
Absolutely.
Because one of my favorite songs, another friend of mine tells me he wants to put a pin in his ear every time he hears it.
Oh, do you want to tell us which song that is?
Oh, dear. Okay. Brandy.
Okay. You're a fine girl. What a good wife you would be.
I want a chain made from silver, from the finest silver in the north of Spain. Yes, that one.
Yeah, okay.
All right. I love that song. Right. My friend hates that song.
Yeah, well, when Charlie's Angels came out, I kind of had some retro affection for it, which I didn't have at the time when it came out. But there are a lot of songs that, you know, when they come out now, because they trigger memories, I'm a lot warmer to them than I was when they were fresh.
Yes, yeah. I understand.
Yeah. Which, you know, and there might be a bunch of people listening to this, a bunch of boomers like you and me, who understand, who get it, who are nodding their heads. And that would be an intersubjective truth.
Oh.
See, that would be something that we're all kind of in agreement on, but we know there's no external right or wrong about this. Right?
Okay. Okay, give me an example.
That was the example.
That was the example. Okay.
I mean, like I said, the value of money. That's
right.
Another one. Laws that are the norm for your culture. Culture. Even language. There's this collective consensus that people agree that we're going to call a chair a chair. And everyone who speaks English calls it a chair. Nobody decides that a chair is a dog. Nobody says, you know what, I like using chair to describe this four-legged animal. You'd have to really have a huge group of people start to do that before people would start saying, did you walk your chair?
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, because I might have put something like that into, you know, something that's always true, but you're right. The way you're presenting it, I'd never thought of it that way.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of times with social science, we're talking about intersubjective truth. It's not necessarily as reliable. Our results are not necessarily as reliable as, say, in the hard sciences. But let's see what our listeners think about this. I think we have a caller on the line right now.
Excellent.
Yeah. Hello, this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Dan. I'm calling from Lodi, New Jersey.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts, Dan?
Well, earlier you mentioned the compatibility between believers and non-believers. I've had that situation my whole life. I'm the only atheist in our entire family.
That's got to be hard.
If I were to let myself think of my family as stupid, that would not only be foolish on my part, because they know things that I don't.
Sure.
I have no doubt whatsoever in my viewpoints as far as there being a God or not. But I know that from their viewpoint, they're thinking in a sacred manner. And actually, both of us, in our parts, we're dealing with what we each feel is the deepest part of our integrity, what we think is right and the best in us.
Yeah.
So for me to demean them, just because I, in my mind, have no doubt whatsoever they're completely wrong. And by a tangent, I know that none of the politicians who have allowed the monstrous acts on Gaza, our politicians, none of them believe in a God, even though they profess it, because it's useful for their being reelected. but they couldn't possibly believe in a God who would punish them for what they're doing in atrocious day after day, heartless acts.
Yeah.
So they're just phonies. But those who believe sincerely, it would be very intolerant and stiff-minded on my part to insult them because of that. Because at the bottom level, they're digging into the deepest part of what they believe is right.
Yeah. Well, Dan, you know, the thing is that insulting anyone or viewing anyone as inferior, like, you know, when we call someone stupid, we're basically elevating ourselves and debasing the other. Obviously, I mean, it's obvious to you, not to everyone, but it's absolutely the truth that does it does no good. It brings us no closer to having a meaningful connection to others. And, you know, there's a lot of hygiene that's necessary when a non-believer like yourself interfaces with believers. And we're going to talk about that, too. We have, Dan, a couple other callers on the line, so we're going to get to them. And I really thank you for your call.
Thank you, Dan.
Yep. Okay, so next caller. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
Thank you, Dan.
Yep. Okay, so next caller. This is WBAI.
Oh, you got to turn your radio down.
Okay, caller. Seriously. Turn your radio down. When I tell you to turn your radio down and listen to the phone, that's exactly the reason why I tell you to turn your radio down, so no feedback. So, Arnell?
There we go.
Show again.
Okay. We'll get better with this. It takes a little learning curve. Who's calling and where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you talk, please.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. We might
okay,
have.
We're just going to go into the next caller because clearly this other individual is just not getting it. So
yeah.
Go to the next.
Well, it must be some technical reason for this issue. But call back, caller, if you are the person that we couldn't connect with. Our next caller, you're on the air. Where are you calling from? Who's calling?
Is that me, the one and only?
Yeah, Myatt. You know, I heard you call into night shift the other night.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, I didn't get to clarify a couple things because it's by the time you get on, it's time to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was very uplifting to me because I was beginning to think I was star-crossed.
Yeah. So, Maya, regarding the objective versus subjective truth, intersubjective, what do you have to say?
Well, I didn't first hear your question. I might have been on the phone, but as to that question, I have some other comment and a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is I think I can reference the Kabbalah. Because it speaks to the seven universal laws, and there is no absolute truth. You know, we cannot arrive at any absolute truth, as it were. And when you think about, and this was mentioned on Coast to Coast last night with the last guest.
Yeah, yeah. Just tell us about you. Tell us about what you believe.
I'm saying to you.
Yeah.
That everything, first of all, is not knowable.
Right.
Okay?
Totally agreed. Totally agreed.
And complex. And so I just say that there is no absolute truth, but we need to do our damnedest to come as close as possible. Okay?
Myatt, that's great. I like that. And yeah.
Is what are your thoughts on the Maya, or the illusion of the world of the Eastern, a lot of it came down through Hinduism and Buddhism and those philosophies, as it were, not so much as...
Well, look, reality, I think you said it, I think you just said it earlier, that, you know, we, absolute truth is unknowable. What we know is a version of reality, and it probably, at least according to a lot of physicists, isn't the only reality there is. There might be multiverse, the existence of a multiverse in which we're just one
Absolutely.
Of who knows how many.
When you get into the quantum world, as a guest put it on Coase, a physicist, you don't have, he said, you don't have the intuition to understand about those extra dimensions and the parallel worlds. We're not equipped
yeah.
to
Absolutely, Maya. Maya, we got to leave it there because we got another call holding. But thank you so much for your call. Talk to
you
soon.
Thank you, Maya.
Yep. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Russ.
Hey, Russ. How are you?
Hi, Arnell and Sharon. Someday, Arnell, I hope you could go into the making 30 years ago of the movie Bride of Frank, which I guess you were I saw it on Google. I know it's not the time to bring it up, but other people should look into it. It's a very interesting aspect of your personality. Yeah. Hey, I'm sorry I don't have a question about parallel dimensions. It's more prosaic than whether Godhead determines everything. But I'd like to know about intersubjective truth. Is that like no right or wrong? And let me give you an example, because my aunt's on 710. I call up 770 right-wing radio, and there's a overnight host that believes that carrying guns and weapons leads to less crime.
Yeah.
And he points out that crime has gone down because in Florida they have carry guns and stand your ground. And when I point out that crime has gone down even where there is strong gun control.
Yeah. And where there is strong gun control, there's always been less crime than places that allow guns. Always. States that have strong gun control have always had less crime.
Which is like New York, Hawaii, and California.
Yep.
Because you're talking about my side gig now, and I do work with a gun safety organization. Arnell, we don't use the word control anymore, because that sets the gun owners off.
Okay,
so
yeah,
call
it's
it
a trigger.
Gun safety.
Gun safety, I like
gun
that.
Gun safety.
It's going to take me a while to learn that one.
It's
Russ,
okay.
Yeah,
it's
Russ,
okay.
Go on.
All right, Sharon, I appreciate that you're interested in a well-regulated militia, and I'm glad to have an expert on hand. But, you know, when I say that, well, Lionel, should every qualified citizen be issued a gun? Would that lead to less crime? They hang up on me.
Yeah.
No, it's a simple statistic. Statistic.
But you know what, Russ? We've got other calls on the line, we're not on topic here.
What sort of truth is that? What sort of truth? Thank you, Arnell and Sharon. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not that when Russ started his call, he was saying, does intersubjective truth mean anything is anything? No, it's the idea that we can, as a group, agree on certain things. And it's not that we call anything anything, but it doesn't have objective validity. It has validity, it has internal validity versus external validity.
And I want to say something, because a lot of people bring up guns in that same way, and statistics have shown where there's more guns, there's more death.
Yeah, yeah.
More guns do not make anything safer. They make the world harder, and they make the world less safe.
And at the same time, I have to urge callers not to call in about guns. That is not our topic today.
No, it's not.
We're talking about belief. And the varieties of belief, objective truth versus subjective truth versus intersubjective truths. And I think we have another caller on the line. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from? Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Hi. Who's calling?
I can't hear you. I'm afraid.
Oh, you can't? You cannot hear me? Okay, that's a problem. I don't know what to do because I'm speaking at the best volume I can.
Okay.
You want to try? You want to try?
I still can't.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that, caller. Maybe try calling back. And while you do that, we're gonna take our halfway break.
You're listening to
Naturalistic Support right here on
99.5 FM WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener-sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
On Wednesdays from 2 to 3, Naturalistic Support is taking listener calls, offering a revolutionary new way to think about ourselves and reach out to each other.
I just wanted to call in to give encouragement to the last caller.
It hit right on where I am right at this moment.
You really hit the proverbial nail on the head.
I really connected with what you were saying about loneliness.
We are hardwired to help each other.
Getting past the blame, owning your own truth, letting go of judgmental thoughts.
I felt so fortunate to hear this.
You went through every single one of the things that I've been working on for my life. Now, you said all that. I'm like, holy cow, what is this guy talking? Is he talking to me right now?
The Naturalistic Revolution is a game changer. Listen to us break it down on Wednesdays from 2 to 3.
I want to thank you so much. You helped me so much.
And you're listening to WBAI Naturalistic Support. We have another caller on the line. We're talking about belief today, and let's see who we have here. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
This is Joe. I'm in Far Rockaway.
Hey, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, man. Thank you. I guess I'll just... I kind of want to, like, address a lot of, like, points you make over the past few weeks. I've been listening. That's very interesting. But I guess I'll just start off with saying, like, where I'm coming from, which is basic. I was an atheist the majority of my life. And then I guess I had, like, just some moments of, you know, whatever you want to call them, enlightenment, realization, whatever you want to call it. And basically now I would say, you know, I'm spiritual. I believe in God. I don't really know what particular faith to say I would belong to, but I guess I will say that really there's just one thing I would say that makes me believe in God, and it's actually like a logical kind of thing. So maybe like just logical, or but I would say I actually got it from this guy, Parmenides. He's this ancient Greek philosopher, but basically his argument was that you can't get something from nothing. The reason why I believe in God is that he has to exist logically, because I don't believe that you could get a universe and all this other stuff from nothing. I don't believe that this is contingent or based on chance or a random occurrence.
Joe, you know, I just want to say that, you know, the atheist response to that is then you get God from nothing?
So... that's the thing, is that God, whatever, you know, however you want to describe it, God, I just view it as the source of being, whatever you want to call that. That logically, it has to be. And I think...
right, but I'm just saying, if you're trying to solve the from-nothing problem of the universe, if you're trying to get at the origin problem, the minute you imagine a God, now you have a different origin problem. But... origin remains a problem. If you're not answering one thing by, you know, with a real answer, you're just changing changing what the question is about. But it's the same thing. What's the origin is not explained by a God, because then you have to explain the origin of the God.
Well, that's the kind of thing that you have to wrap your head around, is that God always exists, but there was never a time where he or she, however you want to describe it, didn't exist. So I think God is the origin of all things. Well, there
are physicists who say the universe has always existed, which if the universe has always existed, then you don't really need a creator. Right? I mean, you know, the idea that there are certain properties that result in the universe that we know and to somewhat love it can be entirely without a divine element. I mean, I'm not arguing with you about this. I'm just saying that these are different ways to understand this. But Joe, nonetheless, you believe whatever has made life better for you. You started out as an atheist for many years, and you've come to some kind of deism, it sounds like. And let me just ask you this. Is that working out better for you? Are you happier? Does it make you connect better with the people around you?
That's a very interesting question, because my opinion on that right now is that basically, like, your belief system, it doesn't, like, whether or not it makes my life better isn't, like, the metric I go by as to whether or not it's true or not. And in fact, I would say, you know, you can make the argument that it actually makes your life harder to believe in God.
So you're saying truth is truth, irregardless of its impact on your life. You're concerned with what's real.
I'm super, like, objectivist. Determinism kind of scares me a little bit, because I don't think we're necessarily locked into one. I think there are different possibilities, but yes, I am an extreme objectivist, and I think, you know, this notion that you're talking about, where everyone has this kind of intersubjective, or people have their own personal subjective beliefs, and that's true for them, I think that's a very, I don't want to say dangerous idea, but I'm very opposed to it, because I think ultimately it's like, how can you get things done if you're ultimately not of the same general opinion and direction?
Well, there are some things that I agree with you we need to all agree on in order to make this world work. I mean, the human experience is highly contingent, right? And it's one of the things that's...
I agree with that. That idea that it's contingent,
yeah,
means it didn't have to occur. Sorry to interrupt you, but...
No, that's not what I meant. What I meant is that we need certain things, otherwise we're screwed. In order for our human potential to be expressed, we have to have a stable world. We have to have... all of the elements that we need of safety and security, and, you know, having our basic, you know, crucial needs met. Otherwise, we don't flourish. And I'm just saying that to have that kind of world, you have to have agreements across the board about a lot of things, but not everything. There are some things that if we wait around for everybody to get on board and see things your way or my way or Sharon's way, we're going to be waiting for a lifetime and many lifetimes, and it's not going to happen. So the idea of respecting a subjective experience makes it possible to say, look, the important stuff about the human experience, that we need to agree on, but if you believe in a personal God, or if you believe that after you die, you'll be reunited with your long lost loved ones, you know, who am I to tell you that's not real? Who am I to challenge that? If that is working for you, you know, I'm not going to challenge it. But when you start to say public policy has got to be dictated on my interpretation of the Bible, well, now we've got a problem, because you're trying to say something that's completely subjective, or at best intersubjective, between you and your community, has to be foisted upon the rest of us, and that's where we have a problem. So that's why we delineate between that which we can all objectively agree is real and that which we have subjective experience about.
I hear you, but I would say that, you know, as human beings, like, don't we, like, in order, like, I think we need to agree on things that we cannot know for sure. So this, this idea that you're talking about where we're all going to agree on these things that we can absolutely know, I think that that is, where is that going to lead us? I'm certainly not like.
Well, okay, I'll give you an example. I mean, this I don't know if you've been listening to this program or how long you've been listening, but we're all about promoting naturalistic humanism. And naturalistic humanism is based on basically three things. First, an experimental mindset, which means critical thinking, and it means being creative and being playful and being willing to take risks and respecting objective data, that which is based on evidence, which means repeatable, reliable information which we can all share. So that's the experimental mindset is the basis. But from that, what we understand about the human experience is that we are always behaving in the only way that everything leading to a given moment allows us to behave. And we're humans are naturally inclined to be caring and cooperative and to want to participate and contribute. And when they don't, that doesn't mean that someone's just a mean person. It means that something's wrong. It means that something has been missing, and when we come across people who are not behaving to their fullest human potential, we just have to recognize that we need to create the conditions that support people's fullest expression of their human potential, and judgmental, and that means there aren't better people and worse people. There are people with different circumstances. It means we don't blame. Anyway, these are basic ideas of naturalistic humanism, and I do believe that if a larger group of people could recognize the truth in those ideas, we'll be better off for it.
Can I jump in for a second?
Sure, Sharon.
My experience was actually opposite Joe's.
Yeah.
I was always a theist. I was raised to be a theist. My parents told me I believed in God, and I believed in God. And then when I became an adult, I actually started to do some, you know, I started reading about other religions. I was raised Jewish, and I started reading, and I knew I had Catholic friends and all that, but that was pretty much all I knew about religion. So I started studying religion, and it was such a surprise to me to learn that there were all these ancient civilizations that predated the Bible.
Mm.
And they were working well together, and they were working together. And what was interesting about all these different factions taking place in different parts of the world, there were so many similarities. For example, there's always a flood story. Okay, even the Native Americans have a flood story.
Sure.
You know, Noah is our flood story.
Yeah.
You know? There's always a miracle child.
Right.
I forgot the name of the miracle child in other religions, but, you know, that's our Moses, that's our Jesus.
Yeah.
But if you look at all other religions, and you know what, kids? There's thousands of religions out there and thousands of gods.
Right.
It was a shock to me to learn all. It was just eye-opening. So over time, I had the opposite reaction. Suddenly, I was starting to realize that maybe these are stories, and maybe being an atheist isn't the wrong way to go.
Yeah.
However, as quickly as that snapped into my consciousness, and it didn't happen quickly, actually, it was gradual. I do know that if something really outstanding and unexplainable happens to me now, it's possible I might turn into a theist again. I can't tell you what that event would be. It would have to be big.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying not as easily as I I think these beliefs can change sometimes.
Sure, sure. Joe, you still with us?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we have another call on the line that we got to get to, Joe, but really thank you for calling in and listening, and call us again.
Absolutely, man. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, my friend. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Hello.
Howdy.
Yeah, hey, who's calling and where are you calling from?
My name is Justin. I'm calling from New Jersey.
Hey, Justin. What do you think about our conversation?
Getting deep. We're really scratching a lot of that surface.
Yeah, yep. We're getting a little deep here. So what do you have to say, Justin?
Oh, too many things. I guess in terms of one thing that I guess that I would start with is that belief does not equate to identity.
Mm-hmm.
People, I think that it's kind of funny even to start there, because if you look at the whole concept of identity, it's like identity is a process by which the mind attaches itself to forms. And what is required for that to happen is a belief structure.
Yeah. Talk to us about you, Justin. What's your identity, and is it not connected to your beliefs?
Well, I certainly have a history of, I have ancestors. I have ancestors that have believed one thing, and then somewhere along that ancestral line, they would be like, "Whoa, hey now, I don't think that's even true anymore," and then left me in a beautiful position to just kind of start from scratch and figure it all out.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's a good position to be in. Justin, we have other callers on the line that we got to get to, but I thank you for your call.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. I just like to add that I'm not attached to the idea of being detached, and I have no clear conception of nothingness.
Okay. Fair enough. Thanks, Justin. And this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
My name is Denise, and I'm calling from Brooklyn. And my belief system many times stems from energy, also stems from what I have come to understand from like a logical standpoint, things like cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
But my belief system definitely stems from the energy or the perception that I get from an instinctual standpoint.
What's it like for you when you're with people who energy is not their belief system? Like, how does that affect you?
I think that human beings come at a certain age, you come to start to recognize energy from the other person that they're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears at times very like obvious. And when their energy is not depicting their inner feelings, sometimes you pick that up as well. There's a show called Heart of Mind.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, Kathy Davis. I like Kathy.
I won't go all into it, but I love the phrase of heart. You know, your inner self, your inner spirit,
yeah,
and your intellect,
yeah,
and how it comes into play as you maneuver through your daily life.
Okay, Denise, thank you for that. We have other calls online we got to get to before we run out of time, but thank you for your call. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Yes, hi. My name is Fidel, and
Fidel.
I'm calling from Jersey City.
Yeah, you've called before, Fidel. Good to hear from you.
Yes, I have.
Yes.
I'm going to jump right in. I called because you delved really deeply into religion, and also your co-host was talking about, I believe it was about Bill Moyers interviewing Joseph Campbell,
yeah,
and the power of myth.
Yes.
And all of those beautiful allegorical stories, if you were to watch that. The reason why I called was because it's fascinating to me, and I'm calling not to make myself any different, because everybody has the same space and everybody has their right to their journey. So I'm not calling to criticize. I'm just making an observation. What I observed was, when we get into religion and God, there's always two things that happen. One, that those people that are very faith-based and believe in God feel that the world is going to come to an end or somehow suffer if the rest of us don't believe in the same God or the same trajectory.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that they credit God with everything that's positive.
Sure. However,
is this God an active God or a passive God? Because if you're going to credit him with being active in everything that's beautiful and wonderful around us, then you got to give him some credit for the disasters that happened as well.
Yeah, so, well, people have these workarounds, you know, where they try to explain evil. You know, there's this field called theodicy, which is unlike theology, it's all about explaining evil. And, you know, people do have these elaborate workarounds because they want to keep their notion of omnipotent, benevolent, all-knowing God, omniscient God. And, you know, and at the same time, I'm not in the business of converting those people. I think that if you want, you know, one of the things that we wanted to get to in this particular program that we really didn't have time to get to, and that's fine because the calls have been great, but we want to talk about how naturalistic humanism doesn't require someone to give up their beliefs in a God if that comforts them, or their beliefs in an afterlife if that comforts them. What's really important from a naturalistic humanist point of view is how we think about other people, how we value the human experience, and what we should do about what we know, because the way in which we share resources, the way in which we judge others, the way in which we punish people whose behavior we don't like, all of that comes into question when we adapt a naturalistic humanist understanding of our humanity.
I would like to just say one last thing.
Sure.
I've pondered this for years. A Course in Miracles teaches you that there's no other truth than love. And I really wish that people would just take a time and ruminate over that. What does that mean? Because it is so true. Anything that comes from a place of love has no distraction.
Yeah. Well, you know, I appreciate that as your parting thought, Fidel. I would also say that, you know, love, you know, we need to define what we're talking about.
Romantic.
Yeah, I mean, to me, when we're being loving, what it means is we are accepting that there aren't better people and worse people. What there are people who have different circumstances, and we could look at anybody you want to point to who's behaved in unconscionable ways, and to recognize that that's not a monster. That's a human being who's distorted, and whether they're distorted partially from genes, partially from environment, partially from epigenetics, whatever it is, we know that their human potential is not being expressed, and we have to stop them from any harm they might cause, but we don't have to inflict harm on them. And to me, that's love.
Love.
That's
understanding
love.
And love.
Yeah.
You just said it.
Yep.
Cure is understanding and love. Anything that comes from love has no distraction whatsoever.
Yeah. I just think we have to be very clear about what we say, because religions teach love, and many of them are far from love.
That is a version of love.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the real sense of love, like the love that you, when you look into a little kid's eyes that you don't know from Adam, that's love.
Yeah, that's connection, and it's a joyous experience. And Fidel, I thank you. I think we have another call we got to get to, but thank you for your call.
Thanks.
Call again. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
No Who's callers.
Oh, no calls. Okay, good. You know, our last caller mentioned Joseph Campbell, and you know, and the caller a couple callers ago, our caller Joe talked about trying to understand what the, you know, what accounts for our universe being as it is. And, it might be something that no human can comprehend. So, yeah, we kind of tell ourselves about a God, but it's entirely possible that it's beyond our comprehension. And maybe that's why we substitute God. But I wanted to play a clip from Joseph Campbell talking to Bill Moyers about the fact that the ultimate mystery might be...
The ultimate mystery of being is beyond all categories of thought. My friend Heinrich Zimmer of years ago used to say, the best things can't be told because they transcend thought. The second best are misunderstood because those are the thoughts that are supposed to refer to that which can't be thought about, you know? And one gets stuck with the thoughts. The third best are what we talk about, you see?
Yep, there we go. You've been listening to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnell Doré. Joining me today was Sharon Stanley. Thanks to our engineer Rich Johnson and to Hilla Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of Naturalistic Support. Archived editions of our program can be found on our website at WBAI.org and at EqualTimeForFreeThought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn. And remember, always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.